Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
We are not, none of us are Steve Jobs. None of us are Gates. None of us are like the other. And it is our origins and originality. It's our choices and the consequences of those choices. It's who we are. And then our environment, and if we're a business person, the people that work with us, our customers, our partners, all of that makes every situation unique. I always talk about this example that life and entrepreneurship is not like going to IKEA and getting a bookcase with instructions of how to put it together. There are no two exact bookcases, because there are no two situations that are exactly alike. Nothing in the world is alike. So by accepting that fact that nothing is alike, we have to accept that the context of situations and who we are, and we have to build our own way of winning.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Doing creative work can be kind of lonely, and that's why we built the Unmistakable Listener Tribe. The Tribe is a community for professionals to connect and support each other. Everything is designed to help you grow your business and share what's working and what isn't. And that's true whether you're a business owner or an artist. You'll get access to feedback, live conversations with guests, and so much more. By joining the Tribe, you become part of a community of creators who all support each other, and it's completely free. Hopefully I'll see you there. Visit unmistakablecreative.com/tribe to join. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/tribe. Sid, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it is my pleasure. So you're actually back here for a second time because you have a new book out called You Are Not Them, all of which we will get into. But before we get into the concepts of the book, I want to start by asking you, what is one of the most important things that you learned from one or both of your parents that have influenced and shaped who you've become and what you've ended up doing with your life?
Interesting questions. There's a thousand of them. I'll tell you one that is probably an unlikely one, but I have somehow embraced it. I have hemophilia, which is a genetic disease, a blood disease. And from very young age, obviously, I had trouble because I couldn't play with people. You know, there could be bleeding and all that sort of stuff. So I was, at a lack of a better word, I was pampered in a way to be contained. And my mother always used to say that you don't have a disease, you have a deficiency. And I was puzzled. What's the difference? What's, you know, it's a disease. But as I grew up, I kind of learned, or I built this perspective of it, that a deficiency is the lack of something, one thing, not everything. And when there is a lack, there is an overcoming or fulfilling that lack, as opposed to when there is a disease that doesn't have a cure, then you're stuck. And I'm not sure if my mother meant it that way, but that's the way I took it. And that perspective, I think, has helped me a lot in my early age.
Yeah. How did you overcome that lack in childhood, particularly when you're a kid who can't do a lot of the things that many children can do, like go out and play? Because from what I understand of hemophilia, basically, if you get cut or something or bruised, the bleeding is just nonstop, correct?
Correct. The problem is not the cutting as much as it is internal bleeding. So let's say you hit your leg on a table or something. And you get the little black and brown or black and blue, and then it goes away. That black and blue is a reflective of a little internal bleeding of small veins that that have been affected. For hemophiliacs, that bleeding doesn't stop. So when it gets black and blue, that means that it's getting well. That means the body is reacting and correcting the bleeding problem. For hemophilias, that doesn't happen. So the main problem is internal bleeding in joints or, mostly in joints, basically. So now the question of how did that help or how did that fulfill that deficiency? I think it helped me to think this way. I may not be able to be Kobe Bryant, but I can own a baseball team. I may not be something, but I could be something else that may be even better. So not to look at others and say, hey, they have these seven things they play with, and I must have the same seven things, was to learn that there are a lot of things in the world and a lot of passions that I can create. And it is my uniqueness that fulfills that lack, essentially.
Yeah. So why do you think it is that so many people see their own deficiencies as limitations, and how did they overcome those deficiencies?
Well, I think we have a society that puts us in boxes. I mean, look what's going on in the politics of our days now. You're either for person A or person B. You're either in this bucket or that bucket. You have, and then you fall in that structure, and then everything else is stereotyped and so forth. So when our rewards are, I don't know why we're using basketball analogies today, but when the rewards or the success is if we have someone like LeBron James and we pay him $150 million or something like that, and that is success, then everybody tries to kind of fit in that mold. That you could see across the board in terms of our politics, in terms of how we define success and so forth. And I think the problem is that having that perspective forces us to see success in a very defined way that has been provided to us by others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking of boxes and definitions of success that are provided by others, did your parents encourage any particular career paths? Was it sort of, like the typical Indian kid gets, doctor, lawyer, engineer, or were they open-minded about what you could possibly do?
I don't think they forced me into anything. There was only one time that my father wrote me a letter. I'm originally from Iran, and I migrated to U.S. when I was 16 years old. And that was through some troubling period in Iran. So my parents couldn't come and visit, and I didn't go back for over a couple of decades. So I only had one letter from my father. And no, in those days, there wasn't email and anything. So it was slow mail that took, weeks to get to me. And it was the time that I decided not to pursue my PhD. And I had a great job. I was on a path to become a partner of a consulting firm, making a lot of money. And my dad said, don't leave your PhD. And he had like a 3-page argument. And my response was, Dad, one day when you come here, you'll see that I will have 20 PhDs working for me. And I did that. But today I understand that perhaps he was right. I shortchanged myself.
Yeah. When you leave, a country, particularly in a situation that was in the one that you're in, and you migrate, particularly at the age of 16, what does that do for your sense of identity? And what did you find difficult about adapting to American culture coming at that age? And how did this end up impacting your relationship with your parents being so far away?
I came about 3 years before the revolution in Iran, which completely shuffled the deck, if you would, in terms of the society, its priorities, and all of that. It was a changing time altogether. Now, for me, it wasn't that difficult. And I think it's because of the background and the attitude that I had. The difficulty was not to adjust to the culture. It was to adjust to the new me, if that makes sense, which was a lot more free. As I said, I was pretty contained when I was a child. And here I had lots of freedom. I was on my own, and I had to make decisions. I had to make choices in terms of how I spend my money, who my friends are, what I do, what I don't do. There was nobody to tell me, don't go play in the thing or don't do this and that. So all of those were the experiences that I think actually helped me build my character. Now, I am in favor of kids. At the young age, having the experience that I had, because I think it builds character very quickly. But that means that that they have to have some sort of a foundation of beliefs, of self-reliance before they do that. It also provides a danger that people could go wrong. I mean, it's easy to get involved in drugs. It's easy to get off the rail. So there is a danger, but I believe that it worked for me to build my character and because of the revolution, I was left with, hey, the security blanket that I had in terms of my parents, in terms of funding, and all of those were gone. And I was left swimming in the ocean, and I had to get to the other side. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, do you have children?
I do not. I have a dog.
Okay. Because I was curious, regardless what advice you would give to parents who are listening to this based on your own experience about how to cultivate that self-reliance in their own kids without shipping them off to some other country.
Don't underestimate your children. Don't try to box them into who you are. I've seen this. In a lot of, I'm not a parent, but so I'm afraid always of dishing out advice. But since you asked, I will dish it out and expose myself to judgment. But my feeling is that kids have a lot inside them. They can think, they can evolve. And they will have choices, and they will make those choices in their way. If you force them into the choices that you think are well, because you as a parent or anybody, we have certain perspectives. We had shortcomings in our childhood. We had desires that we wanted to, do things or accomplish things that we couldn't. And we just want to transfer those desires into our kids. And by transferring those, we have replaced their desires with ours, their capabilities with ours. It's kind of like providing them with a crutch that doesn't allow them to build the muscles that they need to walk and run. So yes, we do need to have guidance, but we should not replace their inspirations and aspirations with ours.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Well, as somebody who decided not to pursue a PhD, I have to ask you about education because you're also an entrepreneur. What do you think the role of formal education is in today's society, like specifically for, you know, careers? Because I think you hear two sides of this coin of, entrepreneurs don't need to go to college. And at the same time, you talked about building character. And I can tell you from my experience that college definitely was a character building experience. I don't think it has anything to do with my career, but it's hard to downplay the value that I got from the experience.
That's an excellent observation. Yes, college builds character, but let's look at the statistics on the other side, because I think this is another one of those things that people I call it torturing the data. They torture the data to admit to what they want. If you look at all the people that have been that have been successful. And people use Bill Gates and Elon Musk. By the way, Elon Musk dropped out of the PhD program, not earlier, or others. If you count them, there are a few. And if you look at how many people are college dropouts and didn't get an education and look at their financial success or personal success, there are many. So statistically, the successes are truly insignificant. Now, can you have somebody that without a college education can succeed? Of course. But look at all those guys. Bill Gates reads 7 to 14 books a week. Yes.
Yeah.
If you educate yourself, doesn't matter how you educate yourself. Because here's the thing. The fact of the matter is, the more knowledge you have, the less risk you face. Risk is reduced by the amount of knowledge, capability, and competency. Entrepreneurs are not risk takers. Entrepreneurs are risk navigators. And one of the ways they navigate risk is by gaining intelligence and knowledge to be able to navigate around risk, not to just boldly jump into risk. That's not entrepreneurship. That's foolishness.
No. Okay, so you used Bill Gates and Elon as examples. I happen to know Elon's ex-wife, who was a guest here on the podcast. And there are two things I want to ask you about. One is, you know, you're talking about Bill Gates dropping out of college, but we can't ignore the fact that Bill Gates didn't just drop out of college. He dropped out of Harvard. And he also happened to come from a very wealthy, you know, well-off family that's upper middle class. And I think that to me, and I know you talk about this later in the book about, you know, generalized advice. And, you know, we tend to use outliers as role models for possibility. But I think one of the things that happens when we do that is we overlook context. So, you know, even if we use these guys as examples, I think in my mind, it's dangerous to say, okay, like these guys can do it, so can I, because there are a lot of variables at play that, you know, you can't replicate. So what is the role of context in your mind in all this?
Well, the role of context is huge. This is again, and you mentioned, we can talk about the book, but the title of the book is You're Not Them. And the whole premise is we are not, none of us are Steve Jobs. None of us are Gates. None of us are, none of us are like the other. And it is our origins and originality. It's our choices and the consequences of those choices. It's who we are. And then our environment and if we're a business person, the people that work with us, our customers, our partners, all of that makes every situation unique. I'm known, you know, I always talk about this, this example that life and entrepreneurship is not like going to IKEA and getting a bookcase with instructions of how to put it together. There are no two exact bookcases because there are no two situations that are exactly alike. Nothing in the world is alike. So by accepting that fact, that nothing is alike, we have to accept that the context of situations and who we are and our, again, if you're wealthy or poor, if you're athletic or not, if you're introvert or extrovert, if you're, all of those makes us who we are. And we have to build our own way of winning, our own way of building our own next version. Mm-hmm. So does context matter? It matters hugely if we are aware of it, if we are mindful of it. The problem is, again, we use these outliers because they're good stories. They make you feel good. There is the American dream. The American dream is not necessarily Elon Musk. The American dream is all over the country. It's and the guy who has a donut shop and somebody who graduates for the first time as an immigrant. It's all over the place. The American dream has to do with our desire at core to be an entrepreneur. And let me define that. An entrepreneur, in my opinion, is somebody who exchanges something they have for something better, knowing that there is risk. Now, that's something better could be a better life for our children. It could be taking our kids on a vacation. It could be building a church. It could be giving back to society, or it could be making millions of dollars. It is on our DNA, regardless of what our origins were, regardless of where we were born, regardless of the color of our skin or the color of our eyes or any situations that we've been in. We have the talent and the desire to take what we have, whatever situation, and exchange that with something better, knowing that there is a risk that we may not be able to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, I know I've interviewed before. You've written another book. And one of my sort of first questions as an author and also somebody now who was running a company, why write a book? I mean, you're a venture capitalist. You probably don't do this for money. Like, there's no, you know, books are a shit way to make money. You and I both know that. What prompted your desire to write this book?
You are absolutely correct. Probably they are a shit way minus 100 in terms of making money. They don't make money. My first book came out of a frustration that, as you mentioned, I've made investments in a lot of companies. I've run a number of companies, built and sold companies. I've also advised a lot of Fortune executives at Fortune 500 or Fortune 100, along with, early stage entrepreneurs. My first book was out of a frustration that I could see people getting hooked, getting addicted to the sameness of where they are, and then falling for a lot of hoopla's. For example, data analytics was the thing that was just brilliant, and oh, big data is this, and you know, all of that, which is important. But what I saw was a lot of hoopla, a lot of addiction to sameness in a lot of companies, big or small. And that intrigued me to write the first book, which took a few years. But this one, and when I wrote it, I noticed that a lot of younger entrepreneurs looked at that book not as a business book, but as something that implies and impacts their own life. So in the past 3 or 4 years, mostly, I have been focused on three things. I teach at the university. I teach at USC, University of Southern California. I make investments in early stage companies. And I have also focused on writing and speaking engagements. And if you notice, they're all kind of connected, because I want to be a practitioner that feels the pain at the same time that I talk about the pain and my perspective. So the reason for writing the book was this. In my deepest thoughts, I have come to the conclusion that we are all an entrepreneur. And in the book, I talk about why I believe this, that we are all an entrepreneur. And the path to our future as a country, as people, globally, however you want to look at it, is to be able to take that talent that's within all of us, which is a desire to exchange what we have with something better. It is that path, it is that talent that will help us take on the next few decades. Because I believe we are at a crossroad that is an amazing opportunity ahead. That is an amazing opportunity ahead. And we should not leave that change to chance.
Yeah. So you open the book early on by saying neither life nor entrepreneurship come with a cookbook filled with generic recipes. How-tos are designed to provide you with step-by-step style instructions of how you can accomplish a task, but entrepreneurship is not a task, neither is life. And that was probably my favorite line from the entire book, because, you know, I think that when people read books like yours or listen to podcasts like this one, they're looking for a map. They're looking for the step-by-step descriptions of how to do exactly what you're teaching them to do. Why is that, and how do they stop?
I have nothing against how-tos. I have something about replacing for how-tos, for creativity, innovation, for replacing who you are or thinking that you can replace who you are with somebody else. So, yes, you do need to know how accounting works. If there are methods to market and sell, all of those are how-tos of entrepreneurship and business. But they are how-tos that are situational. That is, I believe that leadership or an entrepreneurship are kind of two sides of a coin, two twin brothers, however you want to call it. But I believe if you wanted to lead from place A to place B, whatever that is, whatever your desires are, you have to have situational awareness. And that means that no two situations are alike. People are different. And as we said, because they're different, the situation that you're dealing with is different. So you may be able to learn from others, but you are not others. You may be able to see what they would do in some circumstance, but you have to think about this. The circumstance that you are in is very different than the circumstance that they were in. We're not Bill Gates, none of us. Her mom was sitting on, I think, IBM board of directors. He came from an extremely wealthy family. He was able to write a $50,000 check to buy some technology, the core of the DOS operating system. And at that time in 1976, 77, $50,000 was a lot of money. None of us could do that.
Yeah.
Very few could. But that doesn't mean there are not others who have succeeded tremendously. Because mm-hmm. they use their situation to their advantage.
Yeah. So another thing that you say is that when you confine your abilities with words and preconceived definitions, you limit the vastness of your talents. And to me, that was, you know, sort of fascinating, because I was writing this morning about the fact that so often, speaking of words, my roommate and I were talking about this, is, you know, people will look at a job title, but they very rarely consider what's involved in the description, right? So people like the idea of the title of being an author, but then if they look at the work is nowhere as near as glamorous as the title. The work is, you know, sitting in a room writing something that nobody will give a shit about, resisting the temptation to throw your laptop against the wall. Same thing with being doctors, right? Nobody thinks about the fact that, wait a minute, yeah, you get all this prestige and status and money, but you spend all your time in a hospital, you're in a school for 10 years. So how do people not confine things with preconceived definitions or let go of those definitions that limit their talents?
A fact is that we all have biases. That's a fact. And the fact is that there is no zero bias situation. We also are able to dispute ourselves and look at those biases with an objective perspective by changing our frame of reference all the time. So as you mentioned, I begin the book with this idea that if you want to be embracing something new, you have to be an unwritten letter. You have to be a blank page that you can write on. Because if a page is filled, there's nothing you can write on it except, if you write over other words, it would be a mishmash of things, a confusion. To be able to consume new ideas, you need to first be able to be open to those new ideas. Now, afterwards, you can mishmash it like a meat grinder into the rest of your who you are and grind it and pick the pieces of it. But first, you have to be an unwritten letter. And that means that you have to be ready to be provoked, ready to move from where you are in terms of what your thinking and perspectives and definitions of life is, to be able to see the other side of the definitions. See, again, the problem is that a lot of times we confine ourselves with some definitions. And I get this argument about Sid. Entrepreneurship is about this or that or that or that, because that's the way, you know, people say, well, if Elon Musk is an entrepreneur, and sure as hell I'm not, well, that's his kind of entrepreneur. You could be your kind of entrepreneur. I even claim that somebody like Mother Teresa or Gandhi or Martin Luther King are entrepreneurs. They just exchanged what they have with something better in their own definition.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that definitions that you build which would make you have a drive.
Yeah. So I love this idea of an unwritten letter and, you know, your own definition. But you also say that entrepreneurs get bombarded with generic advice all the time. Embrace failure, follow your passion, don't win, and how to say no. Balance work and life, build an effective team, be curious. And my personal favorite, think big. Generic one-liners may sound inspiring, but are often not practical. And, you know, I think the reason that struck me so much was because half the damn self-help books written out there are filled with nothing but, impractical, generic one-liners that sound inspiring, but actually fail in practice.
Well, again, unfortunately, that's what the market wants. How-to books sell a lot. And now we have people that are selling approaches and how to sell how-to books. So, somebody researches for a few days about how to make this or how to do that, and boom, you know, you have a how-to book. Because people consume how-to books. They are looking for a cookbook to build their next version. They don't want to build a boat or a ship. They just want to ride in a ship. But hey, if it's somebody else's boat, it's a rental. It's not your boat. And when you hit some sort of a storm, it's going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what happens. And that's a lot of times, that's why they're not practical. But people like those one-liners. So here's my belief. And this is where, people tell me the book is motivational. Or my talks are motivational. My point is that I cannot motivate you. I cannot motivate anybody. Only you can motivate you.
Yeah.
I can provoke you. And that is my objective. My objective is provoke you. If I just give you one-liners here and there, and you are interested, intrigued for 10 minutes, that is not lasting motivation. A motivation that does not lead to a result, to an outcome, is a waste of emotion.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, speaking of defining success, you know, you talk about this idea of coming up with your own personal philosophy. You say to own your future, start by carving your personal philosophy, a philosophy that works for you and you alone. Realize that other entrepreneurs enjoy their own viewpoints, perspectives that are anchored in their core beliefs, influenced by their origins, experiences, and capabilities, philosophies that fit the environment and times they live in, philosophies that guide their choices, but not necessarily yours. So how does one come up with their own personal philosophy?
So again, the first thing is wipe clean what you know. We'll come back to it, but first we gotta wipe it clean. The reason is again that unwritten letter argument, and then try to examine the different situations, starting with your origins and defining your originalities, and then be prepared to evolve that over and over. This is not, hey, this is my philosophy. This is not, you're not building a Bible. You're not building a, you know, a prophecy. You're building something that is an operating system that evolves and should evolve with time. As you learn, you adjust it. As you read books, as you read those how-to things, you may think a piece of it and say, that fits me. That fits who I am. And that's okay. So your philosophy is not a static thing. It's an ongoing, evolving thing. And it drives a few things. If you have your own philosophy, it drives your strategies. It drives your decisions. It drives how you communicate. It drives how you execute. It influences what you measure as success. And all of that means a good business process.
Well, speaking of navigating, you use this metaphor of a pilot, where you talk about the pilot, the entity, the environment, and the external pressure. Can you expand on what you meant by that?
Sure. So in order to, again, build your own philosophy, I suggest there are a few things that you should consider. And as you've noticed in the book, I don't say you should be this or that. I say, here's your options. Here's a menu of things. This is what's important. And let's look at it from this perspective. One of those things is being a pilot. Another one is being an ocean, or be a dancer and be authentic and those things. But specifically about being a pilot, let's look at risk, because risk is one of those things that is at the core of every decision. Every decision. You go out the door, you want to make a right turn or left turn, you're taking a risk. There is, now, the dimensions of risk change, but there is risk in every decision. There would be no life without decisions and no decisions without risk. So, I use the analogy of a pilot. Let's consider a pilot. A pilot that flies a plane from point A to point B across the globe from one city to another city always checks or has certain things, a checklist, if you would, that measures the risk. How is the weather? Is the engine all clean? Is the electrical system work? Does the cockpit work? Do we have the emergency doors operating properly? All of those things are things that are checklist for a pilot. Now, that's a commercial pilot. That's somebody who does things over and over in the same way. Now, one thought that I want people to continue to think about in this analogy is, who takes more risks, the pilot or the passenger? Pilot or the passenger? The passenger is also taking a risk by being on that, but they don't go over a checklist. It's the pilot's role, the leader. So in life, sometimes we're pilots and sometimes we're passengers. When we are a passenger, we've delegated our risk management, risk navigation to somebody else. Now, we have commercial pilots, very defined, very structured risk measurement. And those are like corporate folks. If you're working for a big company, somebody else has defined those things, and your process is very similar. They've managed the risk, defined the boundaries, and say, here's a checklist of things, check mark all of these, and you're fine. But if you're an entrepreneur that is working on a new idea or outside of that corporate environment, then you're like a fighter jet pilot. You have all of those normal commercial list checklists that you have to do, but you also have others shooting at you, and you have limited resources or fuel, and you have, most importantly, a mission. And it's all of those that defines or redefines the way you take risk or approach risk.
Wow. Okay, so let's look at that other metaphor of an ocean. And you know, when you talk about this idea of being an ocean, you kind of break it up into three different categories: the provider, the connector, and the energizer.
So let's think about an ocean. What does an ocean do? An ocean is an ecosystem. Within the ocean, you have all sorts of plants and fishes, and they live, and they connect. They're connected together. It's the ocean that connects them together. An ocean provides them with an ecosystem, an environment to survive, to live, and to thrive in, to replicate, to grow. An ocean also creates an energy, either with its relationship to the sun as regular waves are created, or in participation with the wind as we have tropical winds, and sometimes it creates massive waves that could be pretty destructive as tsunamis. So at the same time, there's another characteristics. An ocean could be really, really amazingly soft and calm and beautiful, or it could be angry, stormy, dangerous. So there's that oceanness that has all of these characteristics to it. I call that the oceanness characteristic. In an entrepreneurship, unless you try to build whatever, think about what you want to sell, and design it yourself, make it yourself, market it to yourself, sell it to yourself, buy it yourself, and use it yourself, you need somebody else. And that's your ecosystem. Your ecosystem may be as wide as a Microsoft, but 17 million people in its partner network and so forth, or it could be 5 people, or it could be 3 people. It's your oceanness, how you define your ecosystem, how you act as an ocean. It's not the size that matters. It's the attitude that matters. Within your ecosystem, are you a provider? Are you energizing? Are you connecting? Because in any business circumstance, and to be honest with you, in life, you're not alone. And it is your ecosystem that lifts you or makes you be stagnant.
Yeah. So One of the things you talk about when you talk about authenticity, you say that to be you is not about blind acceptance of incompetence or being delusional about your greatness. It's about developing and evolving confidence, not intolerable arrogance. It's about knowing and wisdom. It's about discovery of your hidden talents. So, you know, I think that struck me because of the fact that there's a lot of blind acceptance. There's a lot of delusion about people's greatness. I think, like you said, we all have biases. How do you, one, you know, recognize those biases or become more aware of them and then, you know, start to discover your hidden talents based on those?
You know, the thing that triggered that whole thought. I used to teach philosophy a long, long time ago, and I was I am a fan. I'm whatever you want to call it. So philosophy is kind of embedded in me. And one of the things that I've always seen and has bugged me is this idea of acceptance. That is, we have to accept. To be you is to realize who you are, and that's who you are. I think a lot of times we don't really see who we are unless we begin to carve the first layers and the second layers, unless we're in situations that allow us to exercise our talents, our courage, our capabilities. So accepting who you are in the context of this is the stagnation of this is who I am and I cannot be more, that just rubs me the wrong way. Because I believe not only we can be more, we deserve to be more, and we should strive to be more, because we have tremendous amount of creativity, innovation, capabilities, talents inside of us. So by accepting and kind of anchoring ourselves, chaining ourselves to a version of ourselves today, we are limiting movement. Now, we have to realize the reality of who we are. That's perfectly fine. I am 5'3". I come from this family. I have this amount of resources. I have this level of education. All of those are fine. Those are realities. And it's okay to accept that those are our realities. But it is not okay to accept that we have a better reality that is awaiting us based on our choices and our ability to have wanderlust, to purposefully wander for something new, something different, to improve our situation. Now, how do we do that? Again, it's a matter of disputing ourselves. That is, when we say, here's who I am, okay, here's who I am, but is this who I can be? Is this all I can be? So, that disputing all the time, that awareness of the fact that we are an entrepreneur all the time, looking to exchange what we have with something better. The minute we stop looking to get something better, that's the stagnation.
Wow. So another thing you say, you go on to talking about this idea of the axiom of choices. And you basically break it up into five, you know, different categories or what you call the, you know, five pillars. And you say your axiom of choices offers avenues to express your genius. And you talk about these pillars, which are trust, courage, competence, and situational awareness and variable communication. Can you expand on those and the role that they play?
Sure. So I call it axiom of choices because, it's not how to. And it's a series of choices that you have to be aware of, that in your leadership, in being an authentic leader. Again, if you are going from your origins to your originality, if you accept that you are not them, then everything you do will be in its best form when it is coming from your authentic you. So, When it comes to leadership, there are certain choices that you can make. And I've categorized them into those five buckets, if you would, that you mentioned. First is trust. So in order to change anything, There has to be two things. One is severity of a situation. Severity means it is really bad or it's really good. The opportunity is immense or the dangers are immense. One is severity and the second is trust. If you want people to follow you as a leader, they have to realize that things are severe and then they have to trust that you are the one who would lead them to that better place. So trust is at the corner, is at the center of leadership. Now, but there's not two-way trust. I say there's a three-way trust. The first way of trust is to trust yourself. If you don't trust yourself, nobody will trust you. Second is not to have them trust you, is to have you trust other people, to build the ability to trust people, to realize that you're not empowering them to do anything, that they have that inherent power of innovation, creativity, accomplishment in them. And then people will trust you. So trust is at the cornerstone of leadership. Now, how you accomplish that, how you become trustworthy, begins with how you trust yourself. And how you do that is also anchored in another component that I talk about, which is the courage. We have to have the courage. A good leader has to have the courage to fail, to change, to evolve, to dispute itself. Herself, to listen, the courage to innovate, the courage to leave sameness for a better place. It also, then, if you want to trust yourself first and have others trust in you, competency is important. It's an illusion that, hey, I did this well 20, 30 years ago. Yes, people may follow you. You may be doing things because people get a paycheck, because your father was the owner of the business. All those reasons may create a leadership position for you. But for people to trust you, to follow you, for people to believe in your vision, they need to realize that you are competent at what you do. And that competency goes a long way. That when they see you as somebody who understands their pain, who understands the pain of the market, the pain of the situation, and who is competent to tackle that situation. Not necessarily knowing all the little pieces of every situation, but the ability to realize when they don't know, when they need help, when they get, they can delegate, who they delegate to. That is at the core of competency, which is the third thing that we talked about. And then we have this idea of situational awareness. We talked about that things are different in every person's life because of who we are, what we are, our business, the people involved, all of that. So it is important to be aware of the situations we're in. Sometimes, again, back to the ocean, sometimes like an ocean, we need to be calm. And sometimes we need to show a muscle. Yeah. Sometimes it is important to communicate over and over. Sometimes it's important to realize that under COVID or some other crisis, certain behaviors are needed, even though we didn't. And you saw a lot of people in the COVID situation were able to evolve and change because they were able to adapt to the situations. Oh, we can't work from home because it's too risky or we're exposed. Well, we could. And those who were not able to adjust to those, who didn't realize the situation and adjust to it, to find themselves at the doors of demise. Now, The last thing is variable communication. And that is getting on a platform, using big words or complicated things doesn't work. I use the analogy of if you speak Chinese and I don't, I wouldn't understand what you're saying, regardless of how important it is, regardless of how critical it is, how timely it is. I wouldn't know how to follow you because I don't understand you. So at the cornerstone of leadership is the ability to have variable communication and be able to make sure that people understand, because they have to understand before they can believe a vision.
Wow. Well, let's talk about failure and crisis. You brought up the crisis, COVID in particular, and the two things you say are failure is the bridge between the unknown and the known. When you perceive normal, you fear, you fail, and you regret. When abnormal, you fear, you fail, and you celebrate. And then you say crisis represents a deviation from the norm and requires important decisions. In life and in business, abnormalities are normal. Crisis exposes the uncertainty that is hidden at the center of everyday life and business decisions. And yet we do everything we can to avoid both crisis and failure. So I think that inevitably, when you do something that's never been done before, there's always going to be the risk of failure, particularly as an entrepreneur. How do you not let failure become your identity? Or how do you not let the circumstances that failure creates become your identity?
That's an excellent question. We have different cultures. For example, the Silicon Valley culture versus, you know, even look at California, the northern, the south part have different approaches. In the northern part, the Silicon Valley culture, some say, oh, failure is a badge of honor. That means you've tried. In a lot of places, failure is not. And people look at you as a business person, oh, the guy has failed and, you know, he doesn't know how to do things and so forth. So the environment naturally defines some of those. But I think the most important is our internal approach to failure. If when something happens and I fail, which we all do, if we're moving, if we're doing something, we will fail. And even if we don't move, we have failed at doing and accomplishing. So failure is a part of life. The question is, do we learn from those failures or not? If we don't, I call it a mistake because it continues. If we do, I don't call it a failure. I call it a learning experience. Now, a lot of people say fail often, fail fast. And what I've seen is that drives as a KPI or a key performance indicator some entrepreneurs to just chase failing. Because you told me to fail fast and fail often, so that must be a good thing. So I'm chasing to fail fast and fail often. No, we have to learn fast and learn often. And it's okay to learn from others and from other examples and from other people. But the key is to learn. Now, there is another thing that I think is important to look at, and that's the idea of nervousness. I also talk about nervousness, and I say learn to be nervous, the art of nervousness. We are nervous when we are doing something that we haven't done before. You've been doing many, many podcasts for many years. The first time you did it, you were nervous. No. The second time, you were nervous. But if you want to push the envelope and do something different and get better results, you have to stay nervous. Otherwise, it becomes a routine. The first time you drove a car, you were nervous. We are nervous when things are routine. We're not pushing our boundaries. So it's good to be nervous. A lot of times we're nervous because we're afraid of what the other side is. What if we fail? And then that's, again, is our perspective of failure. If we push it too far past our limitations and fail at what we expected to happen, is that our demise? Or is that a learning opportunity? Now, we're not intending to fail. And this is a critical thing. No good business person, no good art, no good human being should strive to fail. That is not, no. That's not the, you know, the idea of failing fast means strive to fail. No. We strive to succeed, but we know that every success has failure embedded in it. You talked about crisis. The Chinese use two symbols to define crisis. One says opportunity, the other says danger. At the heart of every crisis, there is an opportunity and there is danger. And to be honest, every time we push our limit, we would potentially create a crisis. There is a danger, there is an opportunity.
Wow. So I want to come full circle. We started out this conversation talking about how people define success for themselves. Over the course of your life, how has your own definition of success changed?
Obviously, in the younger days, I was more fascinated with power, with money. Very early stage, obviously. And as I said, I got fascinated with philosophy and I started to read a lot of stuff. And slowly my definition, shifted from one-dimensional perspective to harmony, meaning that success doesn't have one dimension. Success is also situational. I think it's harmony, not balance. Balance means there are two equal things on both sides of the scale. Harmony means there are situations that you travel from one thing being more important than the other, but they live in harmony. So over time, my definition, I guess, has changed, and you could see it in what I do now. I am less intrigued by creating another company and making more money than I used to be. I am more intrigued by being able to learn from people, and I use the analogy of there is an Indian word, I believe in Hindu, called Upguru. Upguru means the guru that is near me at that moment. In other words, it's not the guru that's important. It's us. Let me explain. Anything, a bumper sticker on the back of a car, a bank teller, a person at Starbucks, your students, your kids, your wife, your mother, everything, a book can be a teacher, can be your guru, if you are open to learning that. What I have learned is to be more and more open to learning, because I think that helps me be a more rounded person and achieve that harmony that I mentioned. So the definition of success to me today is if I can, and I mentioned the reason I wrote the book, is if I can convey this message to people that you are capable, regardless of your origins. It is your originality that matters, your authenticity. It is how you make your choices. It is not to avoid change, because without change, there are no choices. If there was no change, there wouldn't be a choice. Everything would be static. It would always be the same. You always have McDonald's for lunch because there is no change. So yeah. Definition of success for me is when I get an email from somebody that says I've changed, I've been impacted, or a student after a few years sends me an email or calls me. That's my success now.
Amazing. So I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews with the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Their authenticity and the ability to not only explore that authenticity, but be brave enough to put it out for judgment. Now, let me explain. There is a play between judging and judgment. Judgment means people have biases. And when we judge, when we have judgment or we look at things with the judgment, that means we're looking at it from our own lens with our own biases. But without judging, without comparing, you can't make any decisions. You can't make choices. You have to say, do I like A more than B? Do I turn left or right? You have to choose. You have to judge. Is A better than B? So to be unmistakably creative is to be able to put yourself out and not be afraid of judgment.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your insights and story and wisdom with us. I love conversations like this because you give us so much to think about. I feel like you go back and listen to something like this, there's just a lot to reflect on. So where can people find out more about you, your work, the book, and everything else that you're up to?
It's available on Amazon. The name of the book is You Are Not Them. The Authentic Entrepreneur's Way. And it's in multiple versions. We don't have the audio yet, but I'm not sure when it would be available. But the other formats are available across the globe. People, if they get it, if they read it, if they like it or dislike it, either way. As I mentioned, that's how I grow. So reach out to me. I'm at sid@mohasib.com, my first name at my last name, and I would love to hear your thoughts. Be my up guru, as you may. And I am grateful for you giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts, my two cents with your audience.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolved. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.